Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Open Talk Radio, 313 The Flash.
All right, everybody. However and whenever it is you may be listening. Thank you for stopping into another fantabulous episode of the Take It Easy radio show live here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash, as well as live on our YouTube channel. Thanks for stopping in, everyone, on whichever platform it is that you are stopping in on here today. Hopefully here within the next hour, we have some more breaking news that breaks, because the one thing I love during these live radio shows is when breaking news comes in all throughout our show. One of my favorite shows and favorite memories of doing live radio was when the James Harden trade broke live on the air with us. It was so cool to have that actually happen. So maybe we'll get some more breaking news come in here today on the radio show as a part to the five breaking NBA news stories that we had within the last like 4 hours leading up to the show today. And so I was planning to come here and, you know, gush a little bit about Kevin Durant, which we did on the Take It Easy podcast today, which you can check out everywhere it is that you get podcasts. Also, check out our link tree by following us on Instagram at Take It Easy Podcast and Comical Sports Memes. Anyways, I was hoping that we would be able to talk Kevin Durant a little bit as a reciprocation of that episode. And what we got here today was about five gigantic breaking news stories in the NBA. So we'll get to all of those, or as many as we can here throughout the next 60 minutes, but just for a little bit of a heads up, really closer to like 50 minutes now, since we've been going for about 3 minutes here on the Take It Easy radio show. So just for what we're talking about here, so we've got news coming in early this morning that Chris Paul has tested positive for COVID, and he's in the COVID protocol now, and he might be out for the Phoenix Suns coming off of his 37-point game four to seal the deal against the Nuggets and hitting 10 consecutive shots and having his best offensive game since, I believe it was 3.5 years ago was the last time Chris Paul had a game close to what he did versus the Denver Nuggets in game four. Obviously, the 37 points being the big number on there, but Chris Paul having that amazing game. And then Chris Paul has that. Next thing we hear coming in is that the New Orleans Pelicans fired Stan Van Gundy after 1 year. He is out of New Orleans after taking that job to kind of be the person who would, you know, groom Zion, turn Zion into the next great thing in the sport. And, you know, that was the coaching job everyone wanted a year ago. It was the premier NBA coaching job. You have that giant, the man-child of Zion Williamson, and obviously it didn't work out for Stan Van Gundy, and he's gone after 1 year, leaving his broadcast booth job, which I'm sure he'll get another broadcasting job at some point here. But anyway, Stan Van Gundy gone for the New Orleans Pelicans. That came in after we found out Chris Paul had COVID. Then we find out that Scott Brooks is fired by the Washington Wizards. And right when we were about to do a Rebuilding the Washington Wizards series on either the radio show or the podcast, Scott Brooks fired. maybe Scott Brooks will get a promotion and go coach Zion Williamson, or maybe he'll go take the Orlando job because that seems to be one of the last stops here for Scott Brooks. So Scott Brooks skips the can, which might be a sign that the Wizards are more open to trading Russell Westbrook at the end of this season. Who knows? The Wizards are probably not in the market for some of these tippity-top coaches. They might be going down a step or two on that list. And then you have the next story coming in, and the biggest story that we're going to – well, actually, no. Next, you have LaMelo Ball winning the Rookie of the Year over Anthony Edwards, which I attest is not really, like, super news. But, you know, we spend a lot of time in the NBA talking about these awards, and these awards get a lot of recognition. And so the fact that we had an award given out on this Wednesday afternoon afternoon on the East Coast. It was more morning for me. But anyways, Anthony Edwards ends up getting the snubbing that leads him to put the league on notice because the Ant-Man didn't get the Rookie of the Year over LaMelo Ball. And then the biggest story of the day, which we will get to here first off, is Kawhi Leonard being out for the playoffs, or at least out for the second round, which could be the rest of the playoffs for the Los Angeles Clippers, with an indefinite ACL injury. And I don't know if Kawhi Leonard is going to ultimately re-sign with the Los Angeles Clippers. I think a lot of this funny math is changing right now, not just in the sport for the NBA, but with the way contracts are structured. Kawhi Leonard took a gamble on going to Toronto for 1 year on that trade, a year before he could hit free agency. He got to free agency, went back home to the Clippers even after winning the championship in Toronto, but only took a 2-year deal when Kawhi Leonard was battling injuries. And this is what a lot of the big stars have done across the last few years. LeBron James took 1-1 deals. He was kind of the first mega superstar of the league to pioneer the 1-1-1-1 deal for all 4 years because it put pressure on the organization to continue adding players to help support the team. And LeBron James ends up, you know, 4 years in Cleveland, 4 years in Miami, and now into his third year with the Lakers, he signed a long-term contract. Same thing with Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant gave the Warriors 2 years on his initial contract, took a one-year option for the third season, and Kevin Durant ultimately declined that player option and left to go to Brooklyn on a long-term contract. And Anthony Davis was someone that we thought was going to take a one-year deal with the Los Angeles Lakers, and ultimately Anthony Davis ended up signing a 4-year extension this offseason with the Los Angeles Lakers. And Jimmy Butler signed a 4-year extension with the Miami Heat, even though Jimmy Butler isn't quite that caliber player. And Giannis Antetokounmpo signed a 5-year extension instead of doing the one-year thing. Kawhi Leonard took 2 years on his contract with the Clippers. Technically a 3-year deal, but with the opt-out after 2, Kawhi Leonard was going to be a free agent this offseason if he so chose. And even pre-ACL injury, Kawhi Leonard, we know, has had a lot of injuries in his past, and what it looks like now is that I believe the correct phrase is left knee tendinopathy is the medical phrase for what Kawhi Leonard's injury is. And I'm trying to figure out which knee is the one that's injured this time, whether it is the left knee. Yeah, it is Kawhi Leonard's left knee, I think. Yes, it appears that Kawhi Leonard, yes, wait. After the foul was called, Leonard immediately began hopping up and down on his left leg. Oh, so this is his opposite leg that traditionally would have the problem for Kawhi Leonard. So Kawhi Leonard has this injury that is sidelining him for an extended period of time, and going into this offseason, whether or not he wants to stay with the Clippers or not, because it felt like, even from the beginning, like his contract extension with the Clippers, a lot of it was about securing that long-term financing. His contract with the Clippers was about lifestyle more than securing long-term financing. That's what I meant to say. It was about securing a lifestyle choice more than it was long-term financing. It was a max contract, but all these players get max contracts in the NBA. And as a result of setting a max contract, many of these NBA superstars end up being underpaid. And Kawhi Leonard is in a similar situation where he is 2 years in with knee tendinopathy, injury to his right ACL. He had quad injuries that kept him out in San Antonio. I feel like a lot of those have recovered, though. They're more of a past issue for Kawhi Leonard. And even with the chronic knee injuries, it felt like Kawhi Leonard should be securing that long-term contract because, Lord knows, we don't know when Kawhi Leonard's body is about to give out. And one of the funny stories of the past is when they were going through the load management phase of the NBA that Kawhi Leonard was getting the most flack for, they sent his medicals to the NBA, and they basically agreed that Kawhi Leonard should probably be sitting out games because of his knee injuries. And so the chronic injuries for Kawhi Leonard at some point are going to be debilitating. We just don't know when. And Kawhi Leonard has shown signs in the past with that. He's had some injuries that have forced him out of games. And Kawhi Leonard, you know, he hasn't quite been Kawhi Leonard in this playoffs, apart from some crazy games that remind us that he's absolutely still Kawhi Leonard, like 42 points in three quarters in a game six. But a lot has been Paul George keeping the team afloat in some of these games. Game four was their biggest, most dominating performance. And it was Marcus Morris hitting a bunch of threes and Paul George hitting a bunch of baskets. And in game three, to keep the season alive, Paul George had 20 in the first half. And Kawhi ends up in the 20s because he's Kawhi Leonard. But, you know, he's been a star, but not Kawhi Leonard. And that, you know what, there's no shame to that point. And so Kawhi Leonard finds himself in an interesting situation where he is 2 years into his prime contract, and maybe he wants to stay, maybe he doesn't. That's another conversation that nobody knows, because nobody really knows what Kawhi Leonard is looking for, or if the Clippers have gotten, their roster has gotten so poor that just 2 years later, Kawhi Leonard is ready to walk out the door. Maybe this injury and the second round exit that is looming before game five tonight will change the math on that. Again, I thought the Bucks were going to win game five, and that ended up changing quite dramatically. Let's actually see what Vegas has listed here for Vegas has for game five. So the Jazz are 7.5-point favorites, but 76% of the spread is towards Utah, and 77% of bets are moving towards Utah. So they are banking on the Clippers here tonight in Vegas. Because the line has shifted so dramatically, they've had to adjust from minus 138 to minus 320 because so many people are betting on the Utah Jazz. So, you know, they're kind of tossing it up in the air. No Kawhi Leonard, obviously. Mike Conley is still, we'll see if he ends up playing or not. But to that point, Kawhi Leonard is gone for the game, and that's going to make all of this math rather interesting because Vegas has to hedge themselves quite a bit in order to make money. Because, yes, it says 70%, but when it's minus 320 now, the lines have shifted, and they are saying that Utah can probably win, even with Pandemic P playing for them. And so you look at what Kawhi Leonard has done across three seasons now. We talk about so post-injury. So there's the San Antonio period for Kawhi. There is the period with the Raptors and now with the Clippers. And Kawhi Leonard's injury history makes it such that we think for Kawhi Leonard's sake, he should probably secure a four-year contract next offseason. And if this is the last time that we see Kawhi Leonard during this run of postseason basketball, it's really going to be a bitter way to go out because of that fact that the Clippers have real roster construction issues across the next two seasons, and Kawhi Leonard can, like, leave them and push the Clippers into the Stone Age if he leaves in free agency. But if this is a lifestyle choice for Kawhi, then make sure you secure that 3-4 year long-term deal in Los Angeles, because Lord knows this could all fall apart very, very quickly for Kawhi Leonard, because it kind of already is. And that's kind of the difficulty that the Clippers find themselves in at this point, is Kawhi Leonard's future is in his own hands. And the fact that he's going to depart from this series, that, you know, if they win the series, let's change all the math on this. But I know we're looking towards game five. We just looked at the numbers. Like, everything is going way in Utah's favor because we know there's no Kawhi Leonard. And, you know, after Kawhi Leonard, the Clippers roster just isn't very good. And this is something that we talked about when we were going through the stats on the Clippers before the playoffs started or during the Mavericks series. The Clippers were better this year than they were last year, despite their record not reflecting that exactly. They had the second-best strength of record in the NBA. They were second in net rating, so their plus-minus points scored versus points allowed divided by number of games played is second-best in the NBA at, like, plus 7 points. So the Clippers were winning a lot of games in stronger fashion than they were last year. But they were also much more contingent on Kawhi Leonard in the regular season 2021 than they were in the 2020 regular season / NBA bubble. I think part of that is a decline in production from Marcus Morris, losing Landry Schmidt and getting less in return for Luke Kennard. By the way, Landry Schmidt was awesome for the Brooklyn Nets in Game 5 yesterday without Kyrie Irving and a hobbled James Harden. And the heroics of Kevin Durant and Jeff Green. It was a fantastic performance. And the crazy thing about it for the Los Angeles Clippers is that without Kawhi Leonard, they look to Paul George to be kind of that Kawhi Leonard figure. And to be fair, compared to regular season, Paul George has played excellent here in the postseason. He's averaged 27 points a game in the postseason series. You know, the pandemic P mantra has pretty much gone away for the most part, which is a lot of what we remember Paul George for. Paul George has been excellent in the postseason. Paul George could maybe get you a 30-40 point game, and even that might not be enough given how high-octane the Utah Jazz offense is. And if the Clippers don't end up winning, it's going to be a brutal 2 months for the Los Angeles Clippers to have to sit through all of this once again with now your future all up in the air instead of the hope of a Kawhi Leonard. Now your future is up in the air because Kawhi Leonard can pound you guys into the Stone Age with no draft picks and being stuck with this core of a team that you're rolling out right now. And the immediate aftermath would be you got to trade Paul George. Like, you've got to trade him and get back some of those draft picks so that you have a chance going into the future to retool and rebuild that team or hope that another star player comes to join even this offseason. So the Clippers are really in a difficult place, and the Kawhi Leonard injury being thrown into the mix of everything just makes it all the more complicated for the Los Angeles Clippers and what they plan to do going forward. And Kawhi Leonard's injury is really shaking things up here as we head closer to the Game 5 here tonight. And ultimately the penultimate finish to the Clippers season and this series that'll change all of this math. So while we were talking, the Padres are playing against the Rockies right now. If you're tuning in on YouTube, you can see my my luscious San Diego Padres jersey that I am rocking here. Shout out to everyone who is tuning in on YouTube, by the way. And Fernando Tatis Jr. just hit a 21st home run. That is not England. A 21st home run that went to 477 feet over the stands for the San Diego Padres. And they're tied against the Rockies, trying to avoid a sweep at this point, which is awesome. Shout out to my man Tatis. Any chance I can get, got a shout out and ref Tatis. So that's been a cool moment for the Padres. Back to these NBA headlines, because there's not a moment to waste here today. Let's talk about Chris Paul, because Chris Paul is now in the COVID protocol. He tested positive for COVID. And let's talk about the COVID side of it before we get into some of the basketball side of it, more of like a sociology of what COVID has kind of become at this point. We are probably, and for good reason, less lenient towards people who test positive for COVID than we were across the last year. I'm not quite sure when the official line of demarcation is where we switched on this. It had something to do with vaccines and the wide availability. But I think when someone tested positive for COVID like last year, it was a different argument than what we had now with someone testing positive for COVID because of the readily available nature of the vaccines and the fact that at this stage of the game, if you haven't gotten a vaccine, I'm going to generalize here. Like, it's not everyone, but I'm going to generalize here that most people who want a vaccine can get one and are eager to get one. Like, people are eager to give them out. There's lots that are going to waste. It's really quite disappointing that they're available, but people are choosing not to use them, despite the fact that there's a shortage in other parts of the world and that there's new variants and things like that. And speaking of variants, like, we cannot confirm with 100% certainty that Chris Paul wasn't vaccinated before this. We don't know whether Chris Paul was vaccinated. We don't know whether it's a variant that he's immune to that's now spreading through potentially his family or people close to him. We don't exactly know. So I'd like to leave that as a disclaimer before going into some of the conversations around COVID, because now it's really going to affect an NBA playoff series the same way Kawhi Leonard's ACL or DeAndre Hunter's, I want to say it was meniscus that he hurt, or Donovan Mitchell's groin, or Joel Embiid's meniscus, which is now partially torn, and he's playing through this series with a partially torn meniscus, or Kyrie Irving's ankle, or James Harden's hamstring, or Dante DiVincenzo's whatever Dante DiVincenzo hurt. This is a different kind of equation that now puts everyone except the Milwaukee Bucks without a player, a key starter to their team, is being gone from the playoffs. It changes all of the math around this playoffs, and LeBron James obviously threw out there the health concerns about Kawhi Leonard and CP3 testing positive for COVID, and every single team having a significant player, and in about half the cases, a star player, missing time or battling an injury in the playoffs because the bodies were not prepared to go through this sort of turmoil. It's not what is being trained for, and the amount of stress on the body. Now, to the Chris Paul side and to the COVID side, I try not to pass judgment within my own life. I think that ultimately judgment does little good for oneself. It gives a false sense of boosted pride when in reality, a lot of us are hypocrites. None of us are idealized versions of ourselves, and there's always things that we can work on. And so I try not to pass judgment around vaccinations and COVID because my spirit was broken back in the fall. Like, I was very much struggling to deal with the fact that, like, we're 6 months into the pandemic. There's no real end game in sight. What we've been told as a reasonable expectation to look forward to, and anticipation, which ultimately anticipation, there's a great, you know, science behind the idea of anticipation. I want to find the quote here because I have it somewhere here in my notes. Is this idea that ultimately anticipation is the joy we feel to dilute the reality that life is hard. Let me repeat that. Anticipation is the joy we feel to dilute the fact that life is hard. And sometimes all we're doing is going on and on, shooting for things to look forward to, and ultimately anticipation gives us that joy to keep doing the things that we're doing. When we have a goal that we're pursuing, we have a joy that we are searching for. And to Chris Paul and the pandemic, I was anticipating an end of a pandemic, some sort of like bright spot in the pandemic. Nope, we're back in school. Nope, we're back in online school again. Nope, we're in the same situation with no real end in sight. And people are still testing positive for COVID, and we don't have any plan to go in without a vaccine. But now that we have a vaccine, COVID is unofficially over, but it's still something that's highly contagious for those who haven't gotten a vaccine. Ultimately, my anticipation was broken. And what that connects to is I try not to judge people for that reason. that because my anticipation was broken in the way that it was, I try not to judge others for the way that they participate. I don't want to judge other people for the way that they go about COVID, even if it goes against facts and science and morals and ethics and the idea of community and caring for the person to your left and to your right, and strong leaders would put other people at ease instead of leading people or instead of misguiding people around vaccines and things like that, as fear-mongering continues to persist in all arenas of whether it be politics or sports or just around change. Change can be scary, but fear-mongering around change is unnecessary because change will ultimately be a good thing. It just takes time. We talked about that around baseball on today's episode of Take It Easy. But something that's been interesting around this conversation is there are precious few people who are going to look to Chris Paul and say, look, you need to be vaccinated. And those precious few people are themselves probably not vaccinated. I myself am double vaccinated, and I think that we should mandate everyone get a vaccine because we do that for pretty much everything, whether it be getting chickenpox shots in order to attend school or go into a place of work. We mandate that people have certain vaccinations in order to attend public schools and things like that. And so I think that those same rules should apply to COVID. With that being said, I'm not going to pass judgment on people who don't get a vaccine. You absolutely should. The world's going to move on with or without you. This is kind of how change works, and change will ultimately come with the vaccine. But with Chris Paul's case, assuming Chris Paul wasn't vaccinated, and again, this conversation works with or without the knowledge of whether or not Chris Paul was vaccinated, it's a huge, costly mistake that totally was predictable. Being able to have Chris Paul available, not from like an injured shoulder, which he was dealing with early on in the playoffs, but just to have him go through the COVID protocols and wait, 2 weeks to potentially come back for the Phoenix Suns, whether they play Utah or whether they play the Kawhi-less Clippers in the conference finals and whatever gauntlet awaits them going forward. All of the math is changing when you take Chris Paul out of the lineup, just as all the math changes when Joel Embiid has a torn meniscus or when Donovan Mitchell has an injured groin or when Kyrie hurts his ankle or James Harden hurts his hamstring or DeAndre Hunter goes out for the season for the Hawks or Kawhi Leonard injures his ACL or who am I forgetting? Mike Conley misses 4 games in the playoffs. Mike Conley was an all-star this year, and he was like the 8th name I listed in terms of catastrophic injury. Just 4 teams still left in the playoffs. We can go back to Jaylen Brown in the first round. We can go back to Goran Dragic and him battling injuries for the Miami Heat and Jimmy Butler having injuries as well in there. We can go back to the first round and point to Luka Doncic getting injured in games 3 and 4 of the Clippers series. And we can go back to Anthony Davis's injury for the Los Angeles Lakers. And we can go back to Memphis Grizzlies didn't really have a big injury in there, but it was a smaller injury. Anyway, to the point being, like Mike Conley was an all-star. He's like, the 7th or 8th name I listed in terms of like catastrophic injuries going into the playoffs here. And just like that, Chris Paul becomes the catastrophic injury for the Phoenix Suns that this one could have been avoided and maybe is a self-inflicted wound. But again, we don't have enough information on it or enough willingness to pass judgment around Chris Paul. And so all of this information that's being received and processed out quickly is going to lead to some strange conclusions. But ultimately, that's what the media machine that exists really around sports, because really there's a lot of people fighting to cover sports. A lot of people really want to cover sports. And sometimes the journalism around it falls apart and the moral and ethical boundaries get pushed a little bit. Like judging Chris Paul for not getting a vaccine, yeah, shame is a very important, powerful tool. I understand that. But at the same time, if Chris Paul is going to be vilified for not getting a vaccine, it's ultimately, it's not the end of the world. Like, yes, it's a pandemic. Yes, everything shut down, but the pandemic as a whole and COVID as a whole, that's a big picture issue. Chris Paul being a byproduct of a larger issue, it's really not that big of a deal. It really sucks within this context of sports, and when we apply sports to society, it also makes things kind of sucky. But ultimately, it's not the end of the world that Chris Paul didn't get a vaccine, and now he might miss 2 or 3 games in the next series for the Suns, because ultimately, if the Jazz and Clippers series without Kawhi goes 7 games, they won't play game 1 of that series until next Tuesday. And by then, they can start testing Chris Paul and changing the COVID protocol so that maybe he'll only miss 2 or 3, or changing to different stages so that maybe Chris Paul could only miss 2 or 3 games throughout the series against whoever they play next. And that's the basketball side of it. From the societal side of it, it's another reason to bring up the conversation around vaccines, because vaccines have now become, just like COVID, a political stance and a political issue and a social issue and an ethical and moral issue. Because again, I stand by the idea that people should have to get vaccines in order to attend public events, large public gatherings, attend schools. You could even argue attending work, like private corporations should be mandating vaccinations instead of not mandating vaccinations because of the political stance that it might take, or the fact that it affects the bottom line, that people don't want to get vaccines but still want to have all of the benefits of a reopened society. And so this is part of that problem where leadership stepping up changes the math around this. And I get it from to a certain extent. I understand. I am understanding people who are not in the COVID camp, or, you know, Montez Sweat. There's a lot of ignorance behind it, and I understand, but I'm not going to pass judgment around it. If you are in a similar situation, I think that we should put enough pressure on people to basically – people can be moved off of this stance, this the ignorant stance that, you know, that you're waiting for more information, or that you don't want to get a vaccination, or that LeBron James' idea that this is a private matter. People can be moved off of that with enough incentive. And so what we need to do is start creating incentives to push people away instead of just offering them free pizza, or in the state of Washington, offering free weed if you get a COVID vaccination. Like, you have to push people a little more. Like, you can't attend public gatherings of larger than 500 people or 1,000 people, and you cannot attend a school without a mandated vaccine, and you cannot attend – say your job, you can't go into an office space of larger than 500 people without having a vaccination. And maybe you could put it down to 100 or 50, whatever is enough of an incentive for people to move off of their stance around vaccines. And it might be unpopular, but ultimately leadership is unpopular at times. That's what the beneficiaries of leadership is to tell people what they need to do instead of what they want to do. And leadership pushes them to do it under their own guise or under their own decision. That's what good leadership looks like. And clearly there wasn't enough of an incentive for Chris Paul to get a vaccination if indeed he did not test positive for COVID. Or I'm sorry, if indeed he did not test positive for a variant of COVID instead of the COVID that he was being vaccinated against, or that he wasn't vaccinated against. Sorry, in the spirit of journalistic integrity, I feel like I should mention those disclaimers. And so this is an interesting conversation that plays out in homes and office spaces and in conversations everyone has all over the places, that what are the jurisdictions we should have on the vaccination rules, and whether or not there's just enough incentive to get people to get vaccinated. And that is a conversation that we need to be having more in leadership positions than on silly radio shows like this after Chris Paul tests positive for COVID and messes up a few games of a Western Conference final for the Suns that won't have even gotten into full swing until we're back here next Wednesday on the Take It Easy radio show. from the basketball side of things, you best hope that you're playing the Clippers if you're not going to have Chris Paul. Because if it's Kawhi-less Clippers, the Suns can beat the Kawhi-less Clippers without the CP3 Suns. The CP3-less Suns can beat the Kawhi-less Clippers. I'm pretty sure. Not 100% sure. I'm pretty sure they can win that game or win that series or win a game in that series or win two or three games in that series. That's technically everything except getting swept, I just mentioned right there. That was not a great dismount, but you know what? We're just going to keep it rolling here on the Take It Easy radio show. Next headline here. Let's throw out Stan Van Gundy real quick, because we've talked about this before on the Take It Easy podcast about why were the Pelicans so bad this year. It was a very strange situation for the Pelicans to be as bad as they were last season, given how nice their team was. With, you know, Josh Hart saying before the season the Pelicans could be the 4 or the 5 seed in the Western Conference. Ultimately, that ended up being the Dallas Mavericks, was what the idealized version of the New Orleans Pelicans could have been. And so the Pelicans end up firing Stan Van Gundy, I guess, after like a failed experiment after 1 year, which now leaves, let's see, Portland, Orlando, Indiana, New Orleans, and Washington being the open jobs, if I remember correctly. I think those are the available jobs. And everything we've seen across the past year and change around the Pelicans suggests that the Pelicans don't really know exactly what to do around Zion, because we talked about this going into the offseason. Like, the Pelicans kind of need to do what the Hawks did a year ago, where like they bring in some free agents because the young guys haven't quite done it, despite the fact Brandon Ingram and Zion averaged 52 points. They really haven't gotten a whole lot else in production from, say, Jackson Hayes, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, I forgot the point guard, Nico Melli. That was the point guard they drafted at number 13. So the New Orleans Pelicans kind of need to figure – Steven Adams is kind of a flop too. So the New Orleans Pelicans kind of have to figure their a lot of stuff out this offseason. And not having Stan Van Gundy as the coach is part of that game plan for them, is that, you know, Stan got 8 months at the job, ended up getting fired, and now he'll head back to Orlando and probably not coach again, but he'll be a nice analyst on whatever network and Levitard show and whatever it might end up being. But it was fascinating to see Stan Van Gundy get fired because it felt like they were going to keep riding it out and change the roster instead of the voice in the locker room. I did not think that they would get to that point. And David Griffin has bought quite a bit of capital. For people who don't know, David Griffin is the president and basically the shot caller in New Orleans. He built the Cleveland Cavaliers championship with LeBron James, of course. And David Griffin ends up leaving Cleveland in a contract negotiation. And David Griffin ends up sitting out for a while. He goes to NBA TV and guest appearances on ESPN. And he ends up going to the New Orleans Pelicans, waiting for that special job to open up. He goes to New Orleans, and ultimately he does very well as the president of the New Orleans Pelicans in inheriting an Anthony Davis chip, starting that blank slate, getting the number one pick in Zion Williamson to work with, netting Brandon Ingram, netting Lonzo Ball, using those picks, despite the fact he traded DeAndre Hunter, which is going to end up being a tough for him down the road. He ends up walking away with Jackson Hayes, Nikhil Alexander-Walker. They had J.J. Redick signed as a free agent. Last offseason, they traded for Steven Adams. He built up a lot of good capital with New Orleans. And so he's not in jeopardy of losing his job. There's a lot of leash in these situations. He inherited Alvin Gentry. He fired Alvin Gentry. He hired Stan Van Gundy. Stan Van Gundy was a flop, fired Stan Van Gundy. And now they're going to try and find another coach, whether it's Teresa Witherspoon or Jason Kidd, which I don't understand why everyone wants Jason Kidd as their coach. or if they look to the college ranks because there's a large exodus of these college coaches going over to the NBA. John Calipari was one of those. With the changing guard of the NCAA, John Calipari has fallen behind the curve, behind the one-time transfer rule. It's the same thing that we talked about on this show, led to Lon Kruger's retirement, led to Roy Williams' retirement, led to Coach K's retirement, and led to some odd teams being really good, like Houston, Baylor, and Chris Beard at Texas Tech, who's now over at Texas. A lot of their success was enabled by being ahead of the curve on the one-time transfer rule and exploiting a major market inefficiency in college basketball. And so maybe Calipari is ready for an exit. Maybe Jay Wright is finally ready for an exit. This would be a good offseason to do it. There's already five jobs open and maybe a sixth on the way if the Bucks lose in the next game to the Brooklyn Nets. So you've got a fifth of the league with job openings right now in the NBA, which includes now Scott Brooks in Washington. So this conversation can also bring in the Scott Brooks news from earlier today, so we can add that into the mix and point to Scott Brooks' job in Washington, the New Orleans job, the Indiana job, the Orlando job, and the Portland job. All of those could be viable options for college coaches to jump the ranks over to the NBA, who are ready for the exodus from the changing landscape of college basketball. And I don't know exactly what that's going to look like, whether it's Calipari departing or whether it's Jay Wright departing or whoever else might end up coming in there. Mick Cronin, and that would be a weird one, but Mick Cronin could take off. Kelvin Sampson has an NBA background. Sean Miller is currently available. So if someone wants to hire Sean Miller, like Orlando, that could be an option. There's a lot of exodus going on in college basketball right now for some of these NBA jobs, and maybe there's assistant coaches, but it just seems like there's a lack of assistant coaches who are, like, readily available to be hired. Feels like everyone throws out Jason Kidd. Everyone throws out Chauncey Billups. Everyone throws out Becky Hammond. Well, at least for the Pelicans job, they threw out Teresa Witherspoon because she was one of the lead people behind the bench with Stan Van Gundy. But if it's the same four names over and over, and like the Minnesota Timberwolves fired their coach and they hired the lead guy for Toronto, and Toronto, you know, for all of their success, their lead assistant is an interesting choice for a hire. He took that job because he had to take that job. He wasn't really getting a bunch of contract offers coming in. And even some assistant coaches that nobody knows are now coaching Oklahoma City. I forgot the name of the Oklahoma City coach, but it's just a total rando coaching Oklahoma City now. And you had Nate Bjorkgren was a coach that was everyone knew as an assistant. And the Minnesota, Taylor Jenkins, is now coaching the Memphis Grizzlies. So you have this exodus of these types of coaches and a lot of retreads. Stan Van Gundy was on his fifth head coaching job. Like, there's a lot of retread going on here. And maybe Terry Stotts will definitely get one of those jobs, and he's deserved it as a retread. But after that, it's a lot of Jason Kidd's, who's a retread and also an assistant coach. Chauncey Billups is the lead assistant coach that maybe will get a job, but it's still really strange to look up and see so many different options. I'm sorry, so many different openings, so many different possibilities, and then yet no candidates that we point to and say, this is going to get a team really excited. And there's a lot of jobs with some big openings. When there's a fifth of the league there and every team has a top 50 player except for the tanking teams in the league, man, there's a lot of good opportunities. Damian Lillard looking for a coach, team that went to the Western Conference Finals 2 years ago. You're looking at Zion Williamson having that job as available. Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal for now. Now, obviously, they might not be there next year, and the math around the Wizards is going to change. But obviously, those are great jobs. And then you have potentially Giannis when Mike Budenholzer gets fired. Like, there's some legitimately good jobs here. And, yes, Indiana and Orlando are starting to rebuild, understandable. But those are some really big jobs. And maybe it's a job that Calipari says he can't refuse, that Jay Wright says he can't refuse. Maybe even Bill Self at Kansas is ready to make a transition, or Will Wade at LSU, or Eric Musselman at Arkansas. Like, one of those big college coaches is ready to make that transition. And it's a really weird time for the changing guard. So I was surprised that Stan Van Gundy did end up getting fired. But ultimately, I'm not surprised by who is waiting in the wake to take those jobs. Because there's a lot of really good candidates, a lot of really strong candidates in a lot of different fields. There's a lot of different places to go get candidates, but none of them that really, like, knock your socks off. Which last year there was a huge candidacy of that. Like Tom Thibodeau was available, like Doc Rivers, Ty Lue. There were tons of available openings last year. Now there's less so, as many openings as there were. And maybe Mike D'Antoni's one of them too. I don't know if he wants to leave Brooklyn or not. And he wants to go coach Zion, or if he wants to go coach Damian Lillard. I don't know what D'Antoni wants to do, but D'Antoni's another guy who he's kind of the de facto coach. He's the X's and O's coach of the Brooklyn Nets, and maybe he doesn't want to give that up at this point. Obviously, Steve Nash is the timeout guy and the head man, but D'Antoni is the guy implementing the offense. Steve Nash comes from the Warriors offense, but he was an analyst with Golden State. And a lot of the offense comes from what they did with D'Antoni in the 7 seconds or less. Obviously, it's an adapted version of it now for the modern times, but maybe D'Antoni wants to go somewhere else and work with another team. But he's got a pretty good situation going on in Brooklyn, so I don't know if he'd want to take off at this offseason. It would be strange if, especially if they make this deep playoff run, now that they're up 3-2 on Milwaukee, it would be interesting to see if D'Antoni was willing to walk away from that and the idea that he's kind of the shadow coach for the Brooklyn Nets and running the X's and O's in the offense, despite the fact that Steve Nash is the head coach who does all the press conferences and stuff. It'd be interesting to see if D'Antoni were ready to leave for one of those jobs, whether it's for Dame, for Zion, or maybe for Giannis. Giannis might be an enticing one, even though they run a ton of ISO. And they run more ISO than even his 2019 Rockets that I'm sure probably drove Mike D'Antoni insane. It'd be interesting to see whether or not he's ready to give up that cushy job as the lead assistant and X's and O's guy for the Brooklyn Nets, because I don't think I would do it. I think I would stick around in Brooklyn. If I were in Mike D'Antoni's shoes, I think I would stick around in Brooklyn for a while there. So that's an interesting story. Scott Brooks and the Washington Wizards. That's where we'll go here. Does the news today mean that Washington is more likely to trade Russell Westbrook? I'm going to float that question out there because I don't really know the answer. I've talked about this before, is that a team at a crossroad or having a devastating circumstance, which, you know, Washington kind of overperformed compared to expectations. They won a playoff game against the Sixers and got the 8 seed. Despite the fact things were looking really bad for a while there, you know, things turned out all right for Washington. And so when you have a result like that, the way to improve is either by changing the team, like the players on the floor, or by changing the structure of the organization. And Washington had changed the structure of their organization in the past. Scott Brooks was the first hire with Tommy Shepard, who's the new GM in Washington. So I don't think they'll move that around, but they did move on from Scott Brooks. They're going to change up the coaching staff. Will they change up the roster? I don't think so, because any move of Westbrook or any move of Bradley Beal would signify a rebuild. And maybe candidates recognize that when they go into the hiring process. I don't know who Washington can realistically hire at this point. I don't know who their lead candidates are, or if they're, you know, dipping from the assistant pool. I don't know what it ends up being, but I don't know quite what the situation is with the why the New Orleans Pelicans fired Stan Van Gundy. Okay, so maybe we should it's not quite breaking news, but maybe we should read this story here real quick from Bleacher Report's Jake Fisher. He's a really good investigative reporter at Bleacher Report. So let's do this story here as we dip apart. But anyway. Do you think that Russell Westbrook would get traded? I don't know the answer, or if they're more likely to do so because they fired Scott Brooks, or if they want a different coach in there with a different voice for their two stars that they're going to double down on next year, despite the fact that Bertans is looking like a bad contract and Hachimura can only do so much, and then they get Thomas Bryant back, but Thomas Bryant was like a Laker reject a couple of years ago. So anyways, let's talk about this Jake Fisher story that has popped up on this timeline as we speak. I have not read it before. We're going to read it and see if there's anything good in here across the last 10 minutes of today's Take It Easy radio show. The New Orleans Pelicans and head coach Stan Van Gundy agreed to part ways Wednesday, team sources confirmed to Bleacher Report. The decision comes after just one season in which Van Gundy's coaching and communication style never seemed to find its footing with Pelicans players and staffers, sources said. Whomever Executive Vice President David Griffin hires next will likely be someone he feels he can better collaborate with than Van Gundy. Van Gundy's preference to play veterans such as Eric Bledsoe often ran contrary to Griffin's hopes of playing the first-round picks his staff had selected in Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Kyra Lewis Jr., and Jackson Hayes, sources said. Griffin, sources said, is a front office mind who wants input in his coach's rotation and lineup configurations, such as Zion Williamson's optimal position, which, by the way, is center, in my opinion. Griffin's front office emphasized moving Williamson from the front court into more of a lead ball handler. I disagree with that. Multiple Pelican staffers believe that adjustment, as well as letting Van Gundy go, was in part due to continuing issues by Griffin to win favor with Zion, such as his public statement about adverse officiating towards his team star that drew a $50,000 fine. Brandon Ingram is also believed to have soured on Van Gundy throughout the season, sources tell Bleacher Report. Interesting. It appears Van Gundy was not the Pelicans' first choice for this position a year ago. When New Orleans dismissed Alvin Gentry following the Pelicans' stint in the Orlando bubble, the front office had hopes of landing then-Clippers assistant Ty Lue as the franchise's next head coach. Lue, of course, coached Cleveland's 2015-16 championship team while Griffin served as GM. Ty Lue did indeed interview for the position, but there was widespread belief around the NBA that Lue preferred the Houston Rockets before James Harden requested a trade, or the Philadelphia 76ers vacancy if he did not return to the Clippers and become elevated to Los Angeles head coach, which he ended up getting. All the while, Van Gundy served as a color commentator on TNT's broadcast from Orlando. This veteran coach garnered significant attention with his thoughtful in-game analysis mixed with an unwavering Twitter presence that specifically supported Black Lives Matter and social justice issues. With a clear goal to make the playoffs behind Williamson, the Pelicans shifted focus onto Van Gundy rather than a first-time head coach, sources said. Van Gundy was suddenly billed as the hire who could altogether win the press conference, relate to players, and use his previous experience to lead New Orleans into the postseason. Van Gundy was officially hired on October 21st, just over a month before players were allowed to report to team facilities for individual workouts. Perhaps that shortened offseason limited Van Gundy in organically building relationships with Pelicans figures, ranging from Governor Gail Benson to star players like Williamson and Brandon Ingram. Van Gundy only had a two-week training camp, frequently lamented the lack of practice time, sources said, that came under league's reduced calendar this season. Nonetheless, Van Gundy's traditional basketball ideologies and old-school mentality have been described as an oil-and-water fit in New Orleans culture. Where previous coaches and other Pelican staffers have made clear efforts to cultivate a rapport with Benson, Van Gundy never did so, sources said. A particular friction emerged within basketball operations this season on what playing style could maximize Williamson and the rest of the Pelicans' roster. The Pelicans were not a slow team, finishing the year 10th in pace, but Van Gundy's tendency to run more methodically diagrammed half-court sets ran counter to Gentry's whirring offense, one that pushed New Orleans back into the 2020 playoff picture, with the Pelicans rattling off 106.1 possessions per contest from February 1st until the season shut down. Yet finding a coach who was different from Gentry was a priority for New Orleans, sources said. Van Gundy places a greater tactical emphasis on defense. Griffin also chose to trade for Steven Adams and signed the center to a contract extension, which would have an impact on any coach's preferred style of play. The Pelicans sought to create a more rugged offense, a rugged outfit that could truly contend for the postseason. But there was initial skepticism around the NBA that Adams' impact on that end of the floor would be worth muddying a runaway offense, whereas Williamson and Ingram wreaked havoc in transition, especially with a point guard like Lonzo Ball so willing to throw ahead into the open court. As New Orleans drifted in and out of postseason contention, it became clear to Pelicans officials and players that Van Gundy's style was not a match for the Pelicans' young core. Griffin now seems to face an increasing amount of pressure to successfully find Van Gundy's replacement. Current Pelicans assistants Fred Vinson and Teresa Witherspoon, who they mentioned in the first reporting about who the new coach would be, are both considered by league sources as serious candidates. But various figures around the NBA question the readiness of either to fully assemble a head coaching post. Milwaukee Bucks assistant Charles Lee, viewed by many as a premier rising head coaching prospect, is expected to draw particular interest for this position as well. With Washington also parting ways with Scott Brooks on Wednesday, there are now six head coaching vacancies across the league, perhaps more to come as the postseason continues to unfold. Griffin now needs to make such a critical hire in an increasing crowded market, and this decision could have seismic ripple effects on the Pelicans franchise and the years to come in New Orleans. So big takeaways for me just reading that story one time through. One, offense didn't jibe. Two, Pelicans didn't have Stan Van Gundy as their first hire, which I guess is not that surprising. Like, Stan Van Gundy, I don't know if he would be anyone's, like, first real hire, but still, it's good to note. And that Brandon Ingram and Zion kind of soured on it at the end of the season, and, shocker of the century, Steven Adams was probably a mistake to bring in. So, yeah. And Scott Brooks, and Rookie of the Year. We almost got to everything here today on the Take It Easy radio show. But with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for stopping into the Take It Easy radio show. Thanks again to everyone who has been here on YouTube. We really appreciate y'all stopping in and supporting the stuff that we do. Make sure to leave that follow as well as we exit. For those of y'all still tuning in here on our radio show on Open Talk, follow us at Comical Sports Memes and Take It Easy Podcast on Instagram. Follow the Take It Easy Podcast wherever it is that you get podcasts. And follow Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash on Instagram and all the other great shows here on Open Talk. So with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, take it easy. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.